Hello and welcome to the Fave English podcast, your one-stop shop for Venezuelan football in English, bringing you fortnightly episodes dedicated to the Venezuelan league, the national teams, and the myriad of Venezuelan players around the world. And welcome back to the Fave English podcast for a new year, 2022, our second year. And pleased to let you know that the podcast will be continuing throughout the year. Very happy to welcome our first guest, Patrick Caskey, joining us all the way from Scotland. Yes, we have a Scottish football analyst here to talk to us about Venezuelan football. These are the kind of things I never expected when I started Football English with Dominic, Kevin and Kat. And hopefully you as a listener are also pretty surprised by this, because it does show the global nature of not just the game, but the growing importance of Venezuelan football. Patrick, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for having me. Honored to be the first guest. And like yourself, I'm also quite surprised that in my 2021 sort of Liga Fútbol in Venezuelan football found its way in. I'm definitely happy for it. It's fun to watch. There's some interesting players, good characters, nice scenery, a lot of stadiums, really nice. But yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. And like I said, the growing globalization of the game has been going on for decades. But Venezuela's growing reputation on the international stage is a story that's only really been told for the past 20 years with their first win in the Copa America in 2007 for 40 years, their continual failure to qualify for the World Cup being an emotive story that captures the attention of people around the world. Every time there's a World Cup qualification, will Venezuela finally qualify? So it's nice to have somebody on with a fresh pair of eyes that perhaps, you know, doesn't know the history of Venezuelan football, but can appreciate it in the moment for what it is right now. So my first question really for you is, what drew your attention to Liga Fútbol?
Well, I think before I get into anything, I'd like to give a lot of credit to the guys at World Football Index. I know you write for them, and they've sort of, I know you've written a few Venezuelan featured articles, but they are sort of the main source of all South American football I'm interested in. Don't just limit myself to Venezuela, but typically beyond the last few months, I've always had a sort of interest in Colombian, Argentinian, Brazilian football, whether that be because they're sort of high quality youth producing countries. They have interesting teams and football manager a lot. But for Venezuela, which I first was interested in around October, November of 2021, it was, for whatever reason, I was doing a data thread on Twitter about players for, so my most of the content I make is within a Rangers and a Scottish context. And it was for teams outside the Old Firm, which is the derby between Rangers and Celtic, who are by far and away the two best teams and financially can compete with lower end teams in like England and Italy and Spain for the most part. So I was looking at players who could maybe play for the teams outside of Scotland. And I thought Venezuela was a market I had never really looked at. I obviously knew like of Josef Martinez at Atlanta United, but beyond that, my Venezuelan football knowledge was non-existent, to put it simply. So the markets like Colombia and Argentina and Brazil are all well documented. And as such, they get the money that they deserve with their players. So I kind of looked out of the box. I looked a bit at like Bolivia, Ecuador, and Venezuela, and so much so I stumbled across Samson Akinyola, who really I took a liking to quite a lot. And eventually that turned into the article analysis I wrote for Breaking the Lines. And through that, I watched a lot of Caracas FC and a bit of Deportivo Táchira. And as a result, I was interested in a lot of attacking talent. That was the first thing that stood out, was there's a lot of young attacking talent, not necessarily all Venezuelan, which I found interesting how I think Bonsuose and Akinyola are the two best examples, how they've found themselves from West Africa to the northern peak of South America. It's not a usual route, but I found it interesting. It was just one of these nice quirks that you don't often see in European football. And I think South America as a whole, but Venezuela more specifically, offers really that many other places don't.
Yeah, and it was really nice to see, that thread on Samson Akinyola and the excellent data visuals that you produced on him. And what I'd be keen to know is, picking up on what you said about, you know, Colombia, Argentina, Brazil getting sort of the money they deserve for their talent, sort of what was unsaid there is perhaps that Venezuela don't. The numbers on FIFA's transfer report from the past 10 years, 2010 to the end of 2019, showed that Venezuela was in the top 30 markets for net profit, making around 51 million in that 10 years. But what that also indicates is Venezuelan clubs don't really buy players. The vast majority of players are free transfers. When you look at the players leaving the country, it was around 830 players left in that 10-year period, but only around 16% left for fees. So the vast majority were also leaving Venezuela on free transfers. But players that did leave for a fee left for an average of $400,000. You know, if you look at a young Brazilian talent or a young Argentine talent, you're paying these days minimum 10 million, like at least 5 million. It's very rare to pick up a young, exciting talent from other South American countries where the fee isn't in the millions. In Venezuela in recent years, the only players that have reached that or have got close to that have mainly come out of Caracas. Walker Ferinas, the goalkeeper, left for just under $1 million to Colombia. And Heriel De Santis, again from Caracas, went to Boa Vista in the summer of 2020 for $1 million. Do you think that players that you picked up on and you highlighted, you've named Akinyula, but I'm sure you can name a few others. Do you think the fees that they deserve and the fees that their clubs are looking for, which is around the $1.5 million mark, do you think that they're fair prices?
I mean, I think realistic, perhaps. I think you made the point of Walker Ferinas de France. I think $1.5 million as well is, I think, realistic, given the fact that, I mean, Venezuela admittedly isn't one of the big markets. We mentioned that earlier, but these are players of obvious talent, and more so you can see around the world, especially in Europe, teams are latching on and becoming smart with their recruitment. There's a cosign that sort of corroborates your quality when you play and perform in a league of higher standard. We see that a lot in Scotland with our players who, admittedly, it's a different sort of level of money. We might want 15 million, but for some of them only offer 7. But I think definitely you could ask for that, especially with the MLS as well. They seem to be expanding and becoming smarter with their transfers. I know there was, I forget the name, Venezuelan guy who went on loan to FC Dallas. He wasn't as successful, but they seem to be sort of doing well and expanding their sort of recruitment. And I think 1.5 is probably realistic to expect, if not more so, but I think it has to be baby steps. You need to be able to prove that you're a consistent sort of provider of talent. And I think the sort of class we have now, to put it in that way, is a good one in Venezuela. I think Akinyola and Chacon especially will go on and do really well. And at some juncture in their career, will end up in Europe playing for perhaps not a top five team in the top five league, but I think we could see them playing in games that will be on TV around the world. I think maybe Chacon more so than Akinyola, because he has a few years on his side and he seems to be more technically able. I think Akinyola is obviously technically good, but he does have that sort of physicality which relies upon, which does struggle to transition when you get into the top five leagues. But yeah, I would expect, I think another example of if you want to say Venezuela selling themselves short, I don't know the exact figure because Transfermarkt has it as a question mark, but I think Eric Ramirez is a good example. I don't assume he went for much when he went to the Czech Republic. And then he went to Dinamo Kiev, and he's now worth between like 4 and 5 million euros. So I think you don't want to repeat those mistakes. And I think these sort of players we see now in the league that just finished in the 2021 campaign are like a good springboard to show that Venezuela can produce and that they should deserve the fees that their sort of neighbors are garnering.
Yeah, and Eric Ramirez is a good case in point, because he left Venezuela without barely playing a game. In the Venezuelan top flight, like it was literally only a handful of games and maybe one or two goals. And it was a similar story for Heriel De Santis, but he's obviously gone to Boa Vista for you know, close to $1 million, if not $1 million, far more than Eric Ramirez left for. But when I think we've been talking about the value for money, it would be a good next question to ask you what you thought of the level of Venezuelan football based on what you saw, and if you were able to make a comparison to a league that perhaps listeners that aren't Venezuelan and aren't diehard Venezuelan football fans could understand.
I think like all South American leagues, you can probably easily put the catchphrase of it. It's technically good. I think coming from Scotland, which is my sort of main reference point, obviously also Turkey, those are leagues which are relatively of higher standard, you'd say, in the sort of food chain, but art of technical ability, which is probably worse. Your average Scottish Premier League player, albeit worth probably quite a bit more than your average Liga football player, probably is technically worse. Whether that be to sort of the climate, coaching, nature, nurture situation is up to debate. But I think the actual football on show is good, especially when you consider when I came in, my only point of context was like Transfermarkt values and the Copa Libertadores and Sudan America performances. And I was thinking, this is a league which Transfermarkt values at like £50 million combined, which is similar to what we have in the Scottish Championship, which is admittedly football, which is terrible. It's like dogged and really aggressive, but we see players here who technically their ability on the ball is far superior to the sort of comparatives when you look at value in Scotland, in the Balkans as well, in Central Europe. And I think probably it's quite similar to a lot of these second tier premierships we have in Europe, whether that be like leagues 15 to 30 in our coefficient rankings in Europe. That includes the likes of like Bosnia, Slovakia, Azerbaijan, the sort of teams in which you might recognize one or two of the teams because they've had a Champions League run or a Europa League run. But I think definitely considering where it is, you will find players who will come probably for a price that you expect, and they'll be something that they're not. They'll be more technical than you'd expect for the 100,000 or the 125,000. But then obviously there is the sort of counterpart where it's not the most physical league is what I saw necessarily. There's quite a lot of players with real pace, especially with the wingers. But I think just naturally, it's another one of those lazy stereotypes, but it is ring true that physically some of these players might find it a bit difficult to transition to Europe. But I think in terms of the quality, it is better than I expected. I think that also has to do with the sort of where I'm placed and my sort of what I thought Venezuela was going to be. I mean, ignorantly, I thought that somehow the sort of football pyramid of Venezuela would have just stagnated because my knowledge of Venezuela is very limited beyond what I see on the news. So I would have, I genuinely, at one point, I was surprised that there was a functioning football system in Venezuela because the last thing I heard was about the 2019 riots and the inflation of the Bolivar and stuff like that. So I think football in itself, if I watch it, allows me to appreciate that Venezuela isn't on fire like the news might consider it. But one of the things I found quite interesting actually was that none of the kits are sponsored by like Nike or Adidas, which took me by surprise. Where that beef was of some sort of EU America trade embargo. I found it just interesting seeing these teams, especially when I watched Caracas and the Copa Libertadores, coming up against, potentially they could play against someone like Palmeiras and Flamengo, and such a great opportunity for, I'm not sure who the brand are, I think it's RS who makes the Caracas kits, but like coming up against a Nike or something like that. So I think just in general, it's a bit undervalued, whether that be the players and their transfer mark ratings, the visibility they get on Twitter and other analysis sites like La Pizarra del BT, one of the big ones in South America. They cover a bit of Venezuela, but not much. But yeah, I think it was better than I expected going in, which was a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, to pick up on what you said towards the end there, in recent years, just to name a couple of examples, like Caracas and Atletico Venezuela have both had like Adidas kits, for example. This coming season, the 2022 season, I tweeted about it because I thought it was particularly interesting. Academia Puerto Cabello's kit is going to be supplied by Kappa, which, you know, if that club go about it right and try and get that shirt onto the international market, you're going to have kit collectors buy a Kappa shirt from Venezuela. It's just unique. But it is, you're right. It is, there's a lack of sponsorship and high-end kit manufacturers in Venezuela. RS have over half the top flight. And then some of the other kit suppliers in recent years have barely had any other custom, for example. And you even get some kits that seem in-house. But with the sponsorship opportunities, again, it's drastically gone down. There was a team in the top flight that I'll leave unnamed that, you know, a few years ago, their shirt sponsor was worth just over $2 million. Whereas that same club last year, who didn't have a shirt sponsor, was struggling to get anyone to pay $250,000. So whilst what you said was pleasing to hear about being pleasantly surprised about the quality of football and what you were seeing given what you hear in the news, because of course that was an element to why I wrote my book and why I'm so passionate about Venezuelan football, there are problems in Venezuelan football that you've probably picked up on in the past couple of months. And it's topical because as of last week, it was the new league format was announced and things were confirmed. So for example, last year, as you saw, there were 21 teams in the top division. Because of COVID, it was split into a three group system for the first half of the season, then a two group system for the second. Again, this isn't normal. This was because of COVID. But in 2022, which will see a return to a normal league format of you know, one league table for the primary part of the season, there's only going to be 16 teams. So that's a drop of five. The reason being, they were making the league smaller to 19 anyway, but then a further three teams failed to meet the criteria for a club license under CONMEBOL regulation. So Venezuelan football, though, I'd say probably is on the way back up and is improving, that there are teams that are massively struggling to pay their players, either because of the lack of finances involved or for basically unfair reasons of owners not coughing up, basically. So it does have its problems, but the fact that this talent can still come through is a reason I love Venezuelan football. And Yerson Chacon yesterday was called into the national team along with Telasco Segovia, an 18-year-old central midfielder at Deportivo Lara, that I hope also caught your attention, which will lead me on to my next question for you. Once Liga Footfay had drawn your attention, what stood out? What else caught your eye aside from Samson Akinyula?
Well, I think generally the attacking talent is really good and dynamic. I think Caracas FC probably have one of the most underrated, like, sort of front three attacks with Echeverria and Richard Salas and Akinyula, and I'd heard of none of them just 3 months ago, and all these guys are putting up both insane numbers and they're visually pleasing. Also Bonsoce on the right, coming in. I was actually unaware of Segovia until one of my friends, which is actually one of the great reasons or byproducts of me writing about Venezuelan football, is that there seems to be a really nice community. Bryant Marquez on Twitter, he talked to me about him and I was impressed, sent me some clips and stuff like that. So he seems tidy, he's quite small, but I think he was named in some sort of one big publication corroborated best players in 2003, and he was on it, which is great to see. One thing that stood out, maybe negative, was some of the pitches are in poor shape, which isn't conducive exactly to the sort of ability to sort of create these technical players that you would want to do in somewhere like Venezuela. But that probably more so has to do with the behind the scenes and the sort of context as opposed to anything. It's not like people are purposefully not tending to it. They might not have the material, the cash flow to do so. But yeah, I think the attacking talent is disproportionate. I'm not saying that there's not good goalkeepers or defenders, but I think naturally maybe it's because my sample size of games I watched was limited. I didn't watch every game for like 3 months. I watched 6 or 7 games. And naturally what you sort of are attracted to is the flair players and the attack. But I felt that there was, like a lot of leagues, disproportionate quality in attack. There's some really good forwards. But then you have to sort of barter with yourself, are they really good or are the defenders not so great? And I think it's more so you have some quality players, but I do think that for the most part some of the defenders are a bit shaky. But I think that helps with for your forwards to get more value, because necessarily if you're coming up against, if it's all an equal playing field, you might not have the same ability to sort of attract talent with the numbers. So I think it almost might help because you have this really nice young core across the league, but more so in the two best teams of young attacking talent. And they are given not the hardest opposition, but they are still young. So playing its men, regardless of their quality, will assist them.
And it would be interesting to get your opinion on someone that, you know, doesn't really know the backstory, so isn't swayed by tradition or public opinion. For the past 14 years, there's been a rule in Venezuela, in Venezuelan football, that every team must field at least one under 20 player. And if that player is substituted, it must be for another under 20 player. And it's been scrapped from this year. There's going to be no obligation. And it's instead been sort of replaced by the introduction of an under 23 reserve league. We've seen a lot of young Venezuelan players rack up thousands of minutes at a young age, thanks to this rule. There's debate over whether you know, these players would have debuted with or without the rule, and has the rule forced some players that never would have played to, you know, get a lot of exposure at a young age, and whether that's good or bad. But what would you prefer if Scotland was to introduce one or the other? What would you prefer? A rule that states every team must have an under 20 player on the field at all time, or an under 20 reserve league?
I mean, to be fair, with the Scotland context, that would be, we don't have either really. We don't have an under 20s league. At least with Rangers and Celtic, two biggest teams, we have B teams that play for this year in the fifth tier. So the first tier of non-professional. Funnily enough, my university plays in it as well. So it's, to be fair, it's a not a very fair level of quality where you have these, like, not elite, but it's a good youth academy both teams have coming up against these sort of part-time players. But funnily enough, the other leagues I'm interested in, Turkey, Azerbaijan and Russia, all have similar litigation. Azerbaijan, most popular, you have to have an under-23 national and an under-21 goalkeeper on the bench. And there's some question over how does that maximize or optimize youth development, or should you only be playing the best ones? But I think in Scotland, I think it, I wouldn't complain if they were to sort of introduce the under-20 rule. Some people argue that it's a waste of space, and if someone is good enough, they'll play, which is true. But especially with tight budgets, it's always big teams as well. It's good to see young players push to the front and gain this sort of experience. But then you can argue how you mentioned there's these like teenagers who are racking up thousands of minutes, and that sort of already caps their potential physically. They might burn out earlier. So it's this interesting sort of medium you have to sort of, or you have to come to, which is like a nice balance. But yeah, I think, I don't think I'd like it. I prefer for there to be no selection restrictions, but I think it's a good way to optimize talent development. And especially if you're coming from, I mean, egotistically or selfishly, I might think Scottish football has a bigger place in the world football than it does, but I don't see us as a massive selling market. But if you are, do you see yourself as, if Venezuela does, as a place to cultivate young players and then send them on to do better, I think it's a fantastic role. And I think we do see a lot of, or when I was watching, there's a lot of good young talent in Venezuela. So I think regardless if that rule was in there or not, I think a lot of these players will still be getting the minutes because they are quality and better than the guys who have 10 years their senior.
Yeah, it was interesting. I tweeted when the, because there was speculation about the rule being axed for a week or so, and then it was made official. And I just tweeted a poll asking whether people thought that head coaches out of habit would continue to field at least one under 20, yes or no. And it was like a 53-47% split. It was, you know, people were very divided just in favor of head coaches continuing to play under 20s out of habit, because, you know, 14 years is a long time for that rule to have stood. And a lot of coaches in Venezuela are young coaches and have grown up with that rule and have grown up with the habit. And it's, you know, it wouldn't be accurate to say that there's like a youth academy system in Venezuela, but you know, a lot of clubs are trying to build youth setups from, you know, under fives up to under 20s. And I think that rule has, maybe it could have been adapted to continue the encouragement of that system, because for many years Venezuelan football was sort of reliant on private academies to produce players, and then the professional clubs would just pinch them at 16 or 17. So it'll be interesting to see the average age of squads next season and how many young players are getting minutes, because when you talk about windows of opportunity to come to Europe, Venezuela and Venezuelan players do have a high proportion of players with access to EU passports and other South American countries due to Venezuela's history. But now the UK has left the European Union. Obviously, the only way for a young South American player to get football in England is through high-end exposure. With the point system, they basically need to be a youth international and playing Copa Libertadores or Sudamericana group stage football and be at the league champions or the top end teams in Venezuela. And with the suspension of all youth football by CONMEBOL until 2023, this Venezuelan generation has missed out on the under 20 South American championships, which would have been hosted in 2021 and looked likely to have been hosted in Venezuela once Colombia dropped out of the running. So there's Chacon and Segovia and Pipo Vivas, for example, the centre-back, and Jesus Quintero at Deportivo Táchira are missing out on potentially an opportunity to play in the UK. But then we've seen players like Wiki Carmona, who plays for New York Red Bulls, who was signed without ever kicking a ball professionally this time last year, has now just received his first call-up to the national team after a healthy amount of minutes as an 18-year-old in MLS. So the talent will rise to the surface given the correct opportunities. What I'd like to ask you next is, having spoken about your opinions on the level and what stood out about Liga Footvay, I'd be interested to know, in once Liga Footvay sort of called your attention, what platforms and what methods did you use to watch and assess the league?
Yeah, so mainly First of all, it was just through Y-Scout data analysis that I found some interesting players, but then I'd watch games of Y-Scout, and then there's quite a few full-length games on YouTube, especially so Caracas's Libertadores qualifying. I think all four games or how many they played are all on YouTube. And then there was obviously decent highlight packages that the league produced, which are also good. But there are, luckily enough, the copyright infringement doesn't seem to be so intense and strict that there are quite a lot of full match replays just kicking about on YouTube, which is something it's lucky because we don't see that much in the European leagues I try to watch. They're taken down immediately. Anything Scottish Premiership, if it's on YouTube, which isn't licensed under Sky Sports or BT Sports, taken down within minutes. So it was good to have this sort of not extensive, fairly limited, but an ability to sort of watch it without having to pay, which was nice. But the Y-Scout more so, because I had access to sort of HD clips and full 90s, which assisted.
Excellent. And when you were, you know, assessing these players in comparison to players in other countries, and we go back to Samson Akinyula because it was, you know, what brought you to my attention and obviously brought you to the attention of a lot of Venezuelan football fans. You made comparisons to one player in Turkey whose name I forget, or perhaps he was in France, and of course, Alfredo Morelos at Rangers. And you weren't the first person and you weren't the last person to make that comparison between Akinyula and Morelos. So, you know, for people that haven't seen Akinyula, or on the flip side, people that haven't seen Morelos, how similar are they? And can you see Akinyula having a similar trajectory?
Yeah, I mean, Morelos, it's good to speak about him now because he's finally found form, because he is quite a grumpy character. He's loved in the blue side of Glasgow, hated in the green side, because he's like that. He puts 100% on the field. But I think their physiques are probably the first thing immediately. They're both not short, but not tall, but they're squat, they're strong, and their low center of gravity makes it really easy to just push off center backs. But funnily enough, I mean, Morelos's early career was also interestingly unique. He was a South American from Colombia who went to Finland, which I think there's another Colombian guy who plays in HJK Helsinki now, but it's not very popular, much like Akinyula going to South America as an African player. But I think immediately my first comparison was that they're similar. They have the same tenacity and the mentality, but Akinyula technically is better, which seems to be quite confusing to someone, because Morelos is Rangers' top goal scorer in Europe. He was the top Europa League goal scorer two seasons ago, and he's been linked with transfers at between 15 and 20 million pounds, money that really we could only dream of, and by extension Venezuelan clubs could only dream of as well. And then this guy, Akinyula, who's operating in Venezuela, is technically better. Some people might question it, but Morelos isn't technically very good. He's fantastic mentality, really good at moving objects, quite literally he's a workman. He is a buffalo, that's his nickname, El Buffalo, and that really works well. He's not great at finishing, but he manages to score goals. He's decent link-up play, and he's definitely not as good at creating chances as Akinyula is, because even though he plays in Venezuela, I'd say he's more of a rounded forward. But I think the next step for Akinyula, I understand he did play at FK Šenica in Slovakia a few years ago, only at 18 again, which shows a real bravery and courage, is to go back to Europe probably at some juncture, maybe MLS, but I'd probably prefer him to move to Europe, because I think he could probably skip the MLS route, because that would only be a means to get an even bigger transfer. And I think, interestingly enough, we have seen some Morelos rumors to leave Rangers, and I think it would be perfect for us to replace him with his literal carbon copy, albeit slightly technically better. Though I would expect, if he does make that big jump to Europe, to a team, that he wouldn't be the sole striker brought into replace. He's good, but I think teams rightfully will still have some sort of reservations when purchasing from Venezuela. You wouldn't sign him and put all your eggs in one basket, but he's given the price reported, $1.5 million, I think is a steal. So a team could financially bring him in and someone else as well at the same time, and sort of do a risk-averse operation and then hope Akinyula is able to transition his evident quality that he shows in Venezuela, which I would back him to. I was on a Breaking the Line space last week. We do one every Friday, and we were talking about the segment was one player who needs a move and then a club who needs a player. And I was talking about Akinyula, and I was thinking along the lines, maybe FC Copenhagen. They have one good striker, but he's soon to leave. Union Saint-Gilloise, the best team in Belgium right now. Two fantastic strikers, but one of them is going to leave because they're putting up crazy numbers. And Rangers, I think he's this sort of perfect opportunity to sort of buy low, sell high. And if he doesn't work out, he'll still always have the someone wanting to sign him in South America, because what he's done in South America hasn't gone on deaf ears. And I think he probably likely always has that route back if he goes back to Europe and it doesn't work out well. Some sort of middle or upper team in Argentina or Brazil will probably take the chance given how well he did in Venezuela. And people shouldn't forget that.
Yeah, and I think this year, if he doesn't leave in this transfer window, he's going to have 6 games in the Copa Libertadores that he didn't have in 2021. Obviously, Caracas went out in qualifying, whereas they're guaranteed group stage football this season. And it for me, it's going to be interesting to see how Caracas do in general, because their manager, Noel San Vicente, left and has gone back to Zamora, a team that he previously managed. And San Vicente was like what Sir Alex Ferguson was to United. So it'll be interesting to see if there's a hangover from that. The guy that they brought in to replace San Vicente, Stefano, has previously played for Caracas, has followed San Vicente at previous clubs before and are fairly similar. So hopefully there's a lot of continuity, because it would be, you know, be awful, not just for Acanula, but all the Caracas players that have showcased themselves well in the previous couple of years, if that squad sort of gets dismantled before it gets a chance to, you know, prove itself in the Copa Libertadores group stage. It was in the group stage of Libertadores in 2020. They got a 1-1 draw against Boca Juniors in Venezuela, for example, and they were only one game, 1 point away from getting to the final 16. So it'd be nice to see them do well this year. And similarly, Deportivo Táchira, also in the group stages, the league champions of 2021, have had a very exciting transfer window. They've signed a lot of exciting attacking players, too many, to be honest. Because they weren't short of attacking talent last season. And although Lucas Gomez, their striker, Argentine, 32 years old, and Freddy Gondola, Panamanian winger, who has gone to La Liga in Costa Rica, they've brought in like 7 attacking players to cover like 3 positions. And obviously they've got Chacon as well. So they're very top heavy. And I can see Táchira winning the title again. Just like to wrap up, away from any individual players in particular, but just as a league, what do you think the viability of Venezuela becoming a country, a league that European clubs away from Spanish speaking, because that relationship with Spain has always been there, and to a lesser extent Portugal. What's the viability and how do you see Venezuela in this moment being an attractive option for Scandinavian or Eastern European or countries like Scotland as well?
Yeah, funny enough, when you're talking about the work permit situation, it is quite endemic and poor in England, but in Scotland we've seen this transfer window, we have an exemptions panel and it's a lot more lenient for us to sign players. We've seen Ruben Kazan's sub goalie sign for Livingston. We've seen a Georgetown college player in America never play a professional game join Aberdeen. We've seen a few American players join. We've seen a trio of Japanese players, one who was uncapped signed. So there doesn't really seem to be, and actually most impressively, Dundee United signed a guy straight from the Ghanaian Premier League, 18-year-old who had never made a cap for the senior men's team and had played a handful of club games. So I think though England might not be a viable route, and we've seen Scandinavia probably emerge. I know when Juan Camilo Perez went to Iceland, that seems to be a smart route because it's a decent association. But I think Scotland definitely, in terms of legislation, if it remains as it does this January, will be a viable route. And I think the top end football players could easily come and play a role at either of Rangers and Celtic, and then get that really good exposure that you get with Rangers and Celtic, both because they're naturally massive clubs, even the Old Firm is watched by millions, but also in Europe, we're regularly competing in the Europa League group stages, have Champions League qualifiers. The champion this year will play in the Champions League group stage, which is, albeit the Libertadores is a fantastic competition and probably the second biggest in the world. Nothing really compares to the European Champions League and the likes of playing Real or Barca and PSG. But I think for the top end, especially the young players, really would be a viable option for rotation players in the Old Firm and a sort of contingencies to then replace players. But I think generally the rest of Scotland could do a lot worse than going to Venezuela and signing players. And I think Turkey as well is an interesting market. They have really lenient signing restrictions. You see teams like Başakşehir and Malatyaspor pick guys out of the Burundian Premier League, so there'll be no problem with them going to Venezuela and signing players who play Premier League minutes. And I think both the lower end Super League clubs and the upper tier TFF 1 League, which is the sort of English Championship equivalent in Turkey, they have money to burn. They spend a lot of money And they have extensive and weird scouting networks, which some clubs will pick up players in completely random countries. So I wouldn't put it past top level TFF1 league clubs coming in and offering decent sums of money. They're not penny pinchers. I mean, Adana Sport just signed Jordan Ibe and they have Daniel Sturridge. So they're spending plenty of cash on their wages. So I think those two in terms would both be smart. And top end Azeri clubs, which is another league I follow, are doing well recruiting from South America. Neftchi, the champions, just took a guy from Internacional's B team who played for Goiás in Serie B last season. And they've taken two other guys who played in the Argentinian Primera Division. So they don't seem to be against the idea of looking further west. But in general, I think it's a viable market, especially in Scandinavia, as you mentioned, Iceland we talked about. But they seem to be relatively risk averse and they like to take small investments and build them up. That's kind of what they're known for, as a sort of breeding ground, despite it being not the climate that's conducive, especially. You wouldn't blame a Venezuelan footballer struggling to sort of adapt and climatize to the climate. But I think all of those are viable markets. It's obviously dependent. Right now it's looking really good because there's lots of top heavy. There's fantastic talent in Venezuela right now. But I think if we see these guys move, we'll be the litmus test will be see, can they produce another, in 5 years, will we see another sort of class or generation of attractive talent? But I'd say for right now, definitely, it's a market in which teams who operate in the peripheries of Europe, in leagues like Scotland, Norway, Sweden, even maybe like Turkey, should be looking at, because they do provide the sort of stereotypical technical ability and flair of South Americans, but on a cut price basis. I think Acañola, Chacon, Bonsuese, Segovia, even Janoski Reyes and Echeverri would all be fantastic options for teams chasing Europe in leagues outside the top five. And I hope they take the risk. It would be good to see, both for Venezuela and to show that clubs in Europe are sort of innovative and taking chances, which is always a precursor for success to me.
Mm-hmm. And to pick up on a name that I've heard you mention a few times now, Jorge Echeverria from Caracas is actually available on a free transfer. He and his agent left Caracas at the end of the season. They didn't continue. So I don't know if there's anything in the pipeline, but as it stands, he's a player that's available. Last year he was living in the same apartment block as Bonsu. So his exposure to English was there for two seasons. He would be a good, I think Echeverria would be a good 8 or 10 option, probably more of an attacking 8 than an out and out 10 for many clubs in Scandinavia. But one like point of resistance that I know that there's been with Scandinavian clubs looking to South America is Scandinavian clubs seem to have less patience with signing a player that doesn't have English. A lot of the time I've seen or heard them say, well, if they don't have English, we're not interested, basically. Which is a shame, because you know that there are plenty of players in Venezuela that do have English, but I don't see it as a reason to write off a player entirely when you're getting that player, like you said, at a cut price or potentially even free. Like if you can get a player like Echeverria for free, are you really gonna discount him just because his English isn't fluent? But that's one problem that I was gonna raise in its viability as a market. And another thing which I think is a shame, and you know, as someone that works with numbers like yourself, you know that numbers and stats can be manipulated or taken out of context. But one bugbear that I have with Venezuelan football, how it's seen with numbers, is that there's this table, this rankings table, that have Venezuela as like the 17th strongest league in CONMEBOL. Like you have like the Brazilian third and maybe even the Brazilian fourth division ranked higher than Venezuela. And when I met with that as a rebuttal, like, oh, the league can't be that good if there's only 10 countries in CONMEBOL and yet Venezuelan's top division is ranked the 17th. But then is it fair to pile in teams like Deportivo Táchira and Caracas and Monagas and Lara like that? Because if you divide the club rankings of CONMEBOL every 20, this time last year, Caracas and Deportivo Táchira were hovering around the 100th place. So in that essence, they're in the fifth strongest subcategory. If you categorize CONMEBOL every 20 teams, create a new level. Deportivo Táchira and Caracas are in like the fifth level of South American football, whereas they're in a league that's ranked the 17th. It's very difficult when you're met with a rebuttal such as that. So I'd hope that when recruitment look at the players that you've named today and the clubs that you've named today, they see those clubs and they see those players in isolation rather than, you know, comparing it to what the league ranking is.
But, I mean, you're preaching to the choir. I mean, that's a slight we always hear in Scotland. This, or it's English League One, it's pub football. But then when you, admittedly, we've grown up the, so we have the similar coefficient table we have in Europe. We're now in the 10th ranking, but it was only 4 years ago when we were ranked 20th. But Rangers and Celtic were both in the top 60 in all of Europe, ahead of the likes of like Besiktas and AC Milan. So it's a sort of lazy comparison in which, albeit a top quality league, has 20 good teams. I mean, you see that in England, you see that in France, but there can be outliers. Rangers and Celtic are similar to, I mean, Caracas and Táchira, and most notably, are teams that are far better than the league they play in. But you're just sort of limited by the fact that you can't just go and ask to join another league. So selectively sort of thinking, the selective thinking is annoying. These are teams which are far better than the 17th best league in South America, for example, or what we were a few years ago, like 19th best team league in Europe, but we have players who could be playing in the top five.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. No, I'm pleased to find a mutual mind, a common ground. Patrick, thank you very much for not just joining us, but like I said at the beginning of the podcast, being our first guest of 2022. One final question, doesn't need a long answer, just a yes or a no, or a little bit of colour. Will you be watching Liga Footvay in 2022?
Yes, as much as I can, but most definitely the Libertadores games. I will most definitely watch both Táchira, probably more often Caracas. I'll try and catch every Caracas Libertadores game. I'd love to see them do well. I don't really have too many affiliations in CONMEBOL football. My Spanish teacher at school was Argentinian, he was a River fan. So they're sort of the team I like. I have the big clubs, but hopefully we can see Caracas and Táchira do well, because more so than any other league, I keep seeing when I watch Libertadores, these teams that lots of teams people wouldn't have heard of popping up in the semis. We saw, I think it was Barcelona from Ecuador, make it all the way to the semis. So why not a Venezuelan team make it out of the group stages this year or the coming year?
Excellent. Thank you again very much. This has been the Football English podcast. Thank you for listening and see you soon. Bye-bye.